I think are joined us. I don't hear Marsai, but everybody else is here. So let us start. So today's talk is going to be given by Andre Okola. And his title is Quantization of Diffeomorphism Invariant Theories of Connections with Non-Compact Structure Group. And he's going to give us an example. Andre.
Okay, thank you very much. So, good afternoon to everybody in Europe and good morning to everybody in America. So today I would like to present, to show you a procedure, a quantization procedure, which can be applied to diffeomorphism invariant theories of connections whose structure group is a non-compact group. So let's proceed to the next slide, to the slide number 2. And what is the outline of my talk today? So at the beginning, I would like to tell you about the problem of non-compact gauge groups. So we know that there is a broad class of physical theories where the configuration space is a space of connection. And connections can have either a compact or a non-compact structure group. And we know quite well how to quantize theories whose structure group is, whose gauge group is compact. But we still have problems with quantizing theories whose gauge group is non-compact. So at the beginning, I will tell you what is the problem with the non-compact group. In the second part of the talk, I would like to introduce to you a possible solution to this problem. This solution consists in application of some projective techniques by Piovsky. And finally, I will apply those projective techniques to a quantization of a very simple toy theory. This toy theory is a diffeomorphism invariant theory of connection, whose structure group is, of course, non-compact. So now, let us proceed to the next slide, the slide number 3. So what is my motivation for this work? So my main motivation is a wish to quantize general relativity using complex Ashtekar variable, whose structure group is the group SL2C. Of course, we know that GR can be quantized using real variables, and in this case, the gauge group is SU2. But this quantum model, at least in my opinion, cannot be said to be completely blameless. Because, for example, this model lacks Lorentz invariance. Moreover, there is a quantization ambiguity, which shows up as the Emirci parameter. The other problem is connected with the scalar constraint. So the scalar constraint expressed by means of the complex variables is quite simple, while application of the real variables make the constraint much more complicated. And consequently, the scalar constraint operator is also quite complicated. So there is a hope that we can simplify the scalar constraint operator simply by using the complex Ashtekar variable. So let's change now the slide to the number 4. So, as I told you, I would like to quantize GR using the complex Ashtekar variable. But if I try to do this, I immediately encounter two serious problems. The first problem is connected to the fact that the group is non-compact. If you want to quantize a theory of connections, then you have to define a space of quantum states, which usually is Hilbert space. And here in the non-compact case, we simply don't know how to define such a Hilbert space. The second problem is connected to the fact that the group is complex. In fact, the complex variables describe complex general relativity. So in order to obtain usual real Lorentzian gravity, we have to impose some constraints on the complex phase space. Those constraints are called reality conditions. And those reality conditions have to be somehow included in the structure of the quantum model. Unfortunately, so far we don't know how to do this. So we have these two problems, and today I'm going to focus only on the non-compactness problem, simply because I absolutely don't know how to solve the problem of reality conditions. So let's change the slide to the slide number 5. So now I'm going to tell you more details about the non-compactness problem. So assume that we have a theory of connection. That is a theory whose configuration space is a space of connections on a principal bundle. So consider such a bundle, P, such that here the base manifold is denoted by sigma and the structure group is denoted by G. And consider connections on this bundle. So these connections are configuration variables, and the set of connections is infinite dimensional. In other words, here we have an infinite number of degrees of freedom. So the first, now we would like to define a Hilbert space. So we know two constructions which can give us a Hilbert space. One construction employs a measure on the space of connections, and the other one uses some inductive technique. And in fact, both methods give us the same Hilbert space. But today, it will be more convenient for me to tell you about the inductive technique. So how do we use the technique to define the Hilbert space for such a theory of connection? So as I said, the configuration space contains an infinite number of degrees of freedom. The first step of the construction of the Hilbert space via inductive technique is a restriction of that infinite number to a finite number of degrees of freedom. We do this in the following way. We fix a graph gamma embedded in that manifold sigma, and given a graph, we consider the space A gamma. You can see this symbol just below the first equation. We consider the space A gamma, which is a space of holonomies along the edges of the graph gamma. So this space A gamma contains a finite number of the degrees of freedom of the full theory. So we can treat this space A gamma as a reduced or as a restricted configuration space. Now we know that this restricted or reduced configuration space is isomorphic to a Cartesian product of the structure group G, and therefore we can push forward the Haar measure to a measure on this space A gamma. If so, then we can define a Hilbert space associated with the graph gamma simply as the space of all square integrable functions on the reduced configuration space A gamma. So this is the first step of the construction. Now, we consider a pair of graphs, gamma prime gamma, such that the graph gamma prime is in a precise sense bigger than the graph gamma. For each such a pair, we try to define an embedding P gamma prime gamma. This embedding maps the Hilbert space H gamma into the Hilbert space H gamma prime. And we try to define those embeddings in such a way that the collection of the Hilbert spaces and the embedding is an inductive family. So if we have such an inductive family, then we simply define the space of quantum state as the inductive limit of the family. And this space of quantum state is, of course, a Hilbert space. So this is how the inductive techniques should work. So now, please change the slide to the slide number 6.
Andre?
Yes?
Could you just say a few words about inductive limit? Not everybody may know about it.
I'm sorry, I didn't expect that. Well, so it's difficult to say it because I don't have any blackboard. So, more or less, the inductive limit is defined like that. So, look here at this Hilbert space H gamma. So we have a vector here in this space H gamma. This vector is mapped by the embedding P gamma prime gamma to another vector in the Hilbert space H gamma prime. So in fact, what we do, we treat these two vectors as the same vector. And then if we have another graph which is bigger than the graph gamma prime, then we again can use another embedding to glue, in a sense, the vectors in the space H gamma prime with some vectors in the other Hilbert space. So simply these embeddings are used in order to glue all those small Hilbert spaces into one big Hilbert space. And this one big Hilbert space is exactly this inductive limit.
Thank you
I'm
very
sorry,
much.
I'm sorry, but... Okay.
Oh, this was very good. Thank you.
Okay. So now let's go to the slide number 6. So the problem is that so far we know how to define the embedding only in the case when the gauge group G is compact. So far, we don't know how to extend this construction to the non-compact case. So what is the problem here? So this particular construction, which works in the compact case, employs the fact that the constant function I of the value equal to 1 is square integrable over any Cartesian product of the group G. Which means that this function I is square integrable over every reduced configuration space A gamma. So now, again, assume that we have two graphs, gamma prime and gamma. And assume, moreover, that the graph gamma prime is a sum of the graph gamma and another graph gamma zero, and moreover, assume that the graph gamma and gamma zero are disjoint. Then, in the case of these two graphs, gamma prime and gamma, the embedding P gamma prime gamma acts as follows. It maps the wave function psi into the tensor product of the function itself and the constant function I. And we see that this constant function, this tensor product is again a square integrable function over the space A gamma prime, and hence it is a vector which belongs to the Hilbert space H gamma prime. It is clear that in the non-compact case, this construction has to break down simply because the function, the constant function, is not square integrable any longer. So one can ask now, maybe we can use some other function instead of the constant function. And the answer is that under some quite general and quite reasonable assumption, we cannot use this function. We have to use this function. So maybe another solution could be to use not the Haar measure, but some probability measure. And the answer is that maybe we can use another measure, but then we would have a lot of problem with solving the Gauss constraint of general relativity. So although the conclusion is that although we don't have any no-go theorem which could say that the inductive techniques do not work at all in the non-compact case, we simply practically, we don't know how to use the techniques, the inductive techniques, to build the space of quantum states in the non-compact case. So the conclusion is that maybe we should look for some other solution to this problem. So let's proceed to the slide number 7. So a solution or a method which can solve the non-compactness problem comes from a paper by Jerzy Kijowski published in 1977. So it was published when I was only 5 years old. So now the question is, how did I find this paper? So in fact, I didn't find the paper, simply it was Kijowski himself who told me about it. The story goes like that. 2 years ago, I was finishing writing my PhD thesis, and I devoted a part of the thesis to the non-compactness problem. And Kijowski was a referee of the thesis, and in his report, he suggested that I can use a construction by him, a construction which was published in that paper, to try to solve the non-compactness problem. So what is this suggestion by Kijowski? What is his method? So his method is based on some interpretation of the graph. So recall that given a graph gamma, we have a space A gamma, which was called by me the space the reduced or the restricted configuration space. So Kijowski says, okay, let's treat this space A gamma as a configuration space of a physical system associated with the graph gamma. Then the Hilbert space H gamma will be a Hilbert space of a quantum system associated with the graph gamma. Now, consider a pair of graphs gamma prime and gamma. In this case, we can see that the configuration space A gamma prime contains all the degrees of freedom which are contained in the configuration space A gamma. This means that we can treat the system gamma prime, we can treat the system gamma as a subsystem of the system gamma prime. Consequently, having those two Hilbert spaces, H gamma prime and H gamma, we can say that the space H gamma describes a quantum subsystem of the quantum system H gamma prime. So now, if we have this interpretation, we can say that it is not too natural to look for the embedding P gamma prime gamma. Simply because quantum mechanics does not provide any natural embedding of the Hilbert space of the subsystem into the Hilbert space of the system. So what we should do instead? So we should look at the next slide, number 8. So instead of, so given a pair system subsystem, instead of the embedding, we should employ a projection which here is denoted by the symbol pi gamma gamma prime. So what is this projection? So consider for a while the Hilbert space H gamma. So this Hilbert space describes pure state of the system gamma. And we don't have only pure states, we know that we can consider also mixed states. So this space below, this space d gamma, is the space of mixed states of the system gamma. So now, this projection pi gamma gamma prime projects the mixed state of the system gamma prime onto the mixed state of its subsystem gamma. Why should we use this projection? Well, the answer is that this projection is defined in a natural way by so-called partial trace. This partial trace acts on density matrices. We know that mixed states are represented by density matrices, and this is a construction which is commonly used in quantum mechanics. So assume now that we define such a projection for every pair of graphs, gamma prime gamma, such that the graph gamma prime is bigger than the graph gamma. Please change the slide to the slide number 9. So as a consequence, we can obtain a projective family. A projective family, which is a collection of the spaces d gamma and the projection, and now we can define the space of quantum states as the projective limit of the family. Should I also tell what is a projective limit?
Quickly, please.
I didn't hear you.
You can quickly.
Okay, so this projective family is a collection of these spaces d gamma prime, d gamma, and we know that for every pair of graphs gamma prime gamma, we can project the space d gamma onto the space d, we can project the space d gamma prime onto the space d gamma. And this projective limit is a very, very big space, such that given a graph gamma, there exists a natural projection from this big space d gamma on from this big space d on the space d gamma. So this is more or less what projective limit is. So now, what is very important is that this space D is not a Hilbert space, but it is a convex set. Why it is a convex set? Well, every set D gamma is a convex set since it is a space of all density matrices, and we know that every convex combination of two density matrices is again a density matrix. So this space D is a convex set. On the other hand, we know from algebra that the set of positive linear functionals on a sister algebra is also a convex set. So now there is a question. Does D correspond to such a set of positive linear functionals on a sister algebra? So the answer given also by Kiyovsky is yes, there exists such a sister algebra. So in order to see how to construct this algebra, take a look at the next slide, number 10. So how to construct that algebra? So let's fix a graph gamma, and then consider the sister algebra of bounded operators on the Hilbert space H gamma. I denoted this algebra by the symbol B gamma. Then we know that the space D gamma of the density matrices coincides with the set of states on B gamma. Consequently, one can show that for a pair of graphs gamma prime gamma, there exists an embedding of the algebra B gamma into the algebra B gamma prime. In fact, this embedding is a dual map to the projection phi gamma gamma prime. Moreover, the resulting family is an inductive family. And again, so now we have an inductive family of sister algebra, and we know that the inductive limit of such a family is again a sister algebra. So let me use the letter B to denote this inductive limit. And then one can show that the state in that projective limit D can be in a natural way evaluated on the just obtained algebra B. And this is the reason why Kiyovsky calls this algebra B the algebra of quantum observable. So this is more or less how those projective techniques by Kiyovsky work. And in order to summarize this part of the talk, let me emphasize that the resulting quantum model obtained by the projective technique consists of two spaces. One of them is the space D of quantum state, and the other one is the algebra B of quantum observable. And here we do not have any Hilbert space. We do not have any Hilbert space. So now let's go to the next slide, the slide number 11. So now I would like to apply that construction by Kiyovsky to a theory of connection. In fact, Kiyovsky originally applied these ideas to quantization of scalar field theory. And it is not obvious whether his ideas can work well in the case of a theory of connection. On the other hand, I didn't dare to apply those techniques to GR without any preparations. It would be a little bit too crazy taking into account all difficulties. So what I did, I just found a very simple toy theory of connection, a theory which is also diffeomorphism invariant, like general relativity, and I quantize this simple theory using the method by Kiyovsky. So what is the theory? You can see the action here, which defines the theory. So the theory is defined on a trivial principle bundle, M times R over four-dimensional manifold M. I call the manifold space-time, although in fact it is not a space-time because we don't have here any metric. And the structure group of this bundle is the additive group R of real number. So the action of the toy theory depends on three variables. A, the variable A is a connection on the bundle, and F, which appears in the integral, is its curvature form. The variable sigma is a two-form valued in the Lie algebra of the group R. And finally, psi is a Lagrange multiplier, which in this case is just a real function on the spacetime. So one can ask now, what was my motivation? Why did I choose this theory? So you can find the answer on the next slide, the slide number 12. So here you can see the famous Plebinsky action for GR. And if you compare this slide with the previous one, then I hope everything should be clear. Simply the action of the toy theory is obtained from Plebinsky action by the change of the group. I just changed the group SL2C to the group R of real numbers. So the advantage is that the group R is abelian, is also non-compact, and it seems to me that it is just the simplest non-compact Lie group. So now let's proceed to the next slide, number 13. Here you can see a Hamiltonian formulation of the toy theory. So now assume that the spacetime M can be decomposed as a Cartesian product of a three-dimensional manifold sigma and the manifold R. Here, this R should not be treated as a group. This is just a manifold. So this R here do not play any role of a structure group or something like that. This is just a manifold. So now assume that we have a coordinate system which is adapted to the decomposition, which means that the coordinates x1, x2, and x3 are, let's say, local coordinates on the manifold sigma. So now we can easily derive the Hamiltonian, which depends on four fields. The field EI tilde is a vector density which plays the role of the momentum variable. The field AI is a connection on the manifold sigma, and it plays the role of the configuration variable. And those two fields, a scalar field C and a vector field NI, are just Lagrange multipliers. So now it is just we see that this Hamiltonian is a sum of two constraints. One of them is the Gauss constraint. This is the first constraint in that integral. And it generates Young-Mill gauge transformation. And the other constraint is the vector constraint, which generates diffeomorphism transformation. And we see that in this case, there is no scalar constraint, like in the case of GR. And the only reason why we do not have this scalar constraint is the fact that that our structure group now is abelian. So this is how the Hamiltonian formulation looks like. And we need this formulation in order to extract physical state from the space of quantum state, which we will build soon. So now let's change the slide to the slide number 14. And now I would like to tell you a bit about a possible interpretation of the toy theory. So let's start from general relativity expressed in the complex Ashtekar variable. So we have two fields, EI tilde and AJ, These are canonical fields, and they are valued in the Lie algebra SL2C. Now, consider a group R tilde, which is a subgroup of SL2C isomorphic to the group R. Now, we have to do two restrictions. So, first, let's restrict the phase space of complex GR to the field EI, AJ, which are valued in the Lie algebra of that subgroup R tilde. So this is the first restriction, and the second restriction is that we should we restrict the gauge group SL2C to its subgroup R tilde. Now it is not difficult to show that this restricted theory just defined coincides, in fact, with the toy theory. In other words, this toy theory describes 1 plus 1 degenerate sector of GR, and this sector at the classical level was described by Ted Jacobson in 1996. So this is how we can look at the toy theory, simply as a degenerate sector of general relativity. Okay, so now let's proceed to the next slide, number 15. So now I would like to quantize the toy theory, which means that first of all I would like to find or to construct quantum state for the theory. Now I would like to emphasize that instead of graphs, I will use loops. Why? I will tell you in a moment why I will use loops instead of graphs. So consider a set L, which is a finite set of analytic, not piecewise analytic, but analytic loops, which are embedded in the manifold sigma. And again, we have such a reduced or restricted configuration space AL, which is just the set of all holonomies along the loops in this set L. And again, this reduced configuration space is isomorphic to some Cartesian product of some copies of the structure group R. So this is why we can define the Hilbert space, as you can see, using, in fact, the Lebesgue measure on the group R, which is, in fact, a Haar measure on the group. So at this point, we have this Hilbert space HL, which can be thought as a Hilbert space of a system, of a physical system defined by the loop. Now consider two such systems, one given by loops L prime, and the other one given by the loops L. And assume that this set L prime is bigger than this set L, in the sense that the set L is a subset of L prime. Now, it is not difficult to show that the configuration space L prime can be decomposed as the Cartesian product of the form of the following form. You can see see this decomposition on the slide. And here I can explain to you why I use only analytic loops, not piecewise analytic loops. In fact, the reason is that if I have a set of piecewise analytic loops, then I can compose some of them and get another set of analytic loops, which in fact defines the same restricted configuration space. So if I use only, if I use piecewise analytic loops, then I wouldn't get the decomposition like here, because then this this set L prime minus L wouldn't be defined uniquely. So if I use piecewise analytic loop, such I could get such a decomposition, but there would be quite large ambiguity here. So in order to get rid of this ambiguity, I have to use only analytic loop. So now I have this decomposition of the configuration space A L prime, and from this decomposition I get the I get a decomposition of the Hilbert space H L prime, which has a form of the tensor product you can see here. So now we can see that in this tensor product, this space, Hilbert space HL, describes quantum degrees of freedom of the quantum system L, while this Hilbert space HL prime minus L describes some remaining degrees of freedom which do not belong to the system L. This means that the projection phi L R prime should be defined by the partial trace with respect to the Hilbert space H L prime minus L. So this is how we define the projections here. And of course we can define those projections for every pair L prime bigger than L. So consequently we obtain the projective family, and we obtain the space D, the space of quantum state. And now I say that those states are Young-Wheeler's gauge invariant. Why it is so? So recall that I use here loops instead of graphs. And because the structure group here is abelian, then a holonomy along any loops is Young-Mills gauge invariant. This means that gauge transformations act on the configuration space AL as just as the identity map. Consequently, every state, every vector in the Hilbert space HL is also gauge invariant, and every mixed state in the space DL is also gauge invariant. Consequently, the space D, the space of all states, is also, every state in this space is also gauge invariant. So,
Andre?
Yes?
So, you have all, this L that you are considering,
yes,
consists of loops which are based, right? They all pass through a fixed point.
Yes, they are glued by means of those projections.
Okay.
And the result is this space D.
And I guess the question was, is in fact, if these are phased, in other words, is there a fixed point through which the loops pass? And I guess in the in the abelian case, it doesn't matter, but...
Okay, so so in fact, I didn't tell here anything about the base point here, and I agree with you that in the non-abelian case, we would have some problem with the fixed point, and so far I'm not completely sure how to solve this problem.
Okay.
So now this construction works well in the abelian case, but I expect some difficulties in the non-compact case, in the non-abelian case. Sorry.
Okay.
So now let's proceed to the next slide. The slide number 16. So we already obtained the space of quantum state, the space D, and using that construction by Kiyovsky, we can obtain a sister algebra D of quantum observable. And of course, this algebra, the quantum observables in the algebra will be also Young-Mills gauge invariant. Therefore, we can treat the pair DB as the quantum toy theory with the Gauss constraint solved and with the vector constraint unsolved. So the last step of quantization is to solve the vector constraint, which means that we need to find diffeomorphic invariant state in the space D. And here it turned out that the set of diffeomorphic invariant states, the set the deep, is quite large, is sufficiently large to be treated as a set of physical states. We know that in order that if you want to have a non-trivial theory, then the set of solutions of all constraints should be also non-trivial. So it seems to me that this set DDIF is large enough to be treated as the set of physical states. So what is the resulting quantum toy theory? The resulting quantum toy theory is a pair which consists of two ingredients. One of them is this space, DDIF of states, which are both gauge and diffeomorphic invariant. And the other ingredient is the sister algebra B of quantum observable. And now I should emphasize that this algebra of quantum observables contains only Young-Mills gauge invariant one. And in this case, there are no non-trivial diffeomorphic invariant observables in this algebra. So this can be considered to be a serious drawback, a serious flaw of the theory. But on the other hand, it is true that each expectation value of a state of a diffeomorphic invariant state on an element of the algebra is diffeomorphic invariant. So on the other hand, maybe this feature can be treated as an advantage, taking into account well-known problems with defining diffeomorphic invariant observables for a theory like general relativity. So now we are coming to the end of the talk. So let me summarize the talk. Let's proceed to the next slide, number 17. So I would like to say that there is a hope that Kiyovsky's projective techniques may solve the non-compactness problem of general relativity. In particular, those techniques were successfully applied to the toy theory, whose gauge group is non-compact. But I should say some words of warning, because, those techniques succeeded in the case of the toy theory, but I cannot say now whether it was because of the power of the techniques or maybe because of the simplicity of the theory. So if somebody would like to apply those techniques to GR, then he or she would immediately encounter problems with non-trivial gauge transformation generated by non-abelian group SL2C. And again, we will have the non-vanishing scalar constraint. And of course, another question is, what about the reality conditions? This problem also has to be solved. So finally, let's take a look at the last transparent, where number 18, where you can find references. So the first reference here is that paper by Kiyovsky, the paper published in 1977. The other paper is a paper of mine. You can find it in the archive. And this paper contains a quite very detailed description of the quantization of this toy theory. And finally, the third paper is a paper by Ted Jacobson, which describes the 1 plus 1 degenerate sector of gravity. So this is all I wanted to say today. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, I think there are several questions.
Yes.
So let us start here at Penn State, and then we'll go around. Okay, I think there's a comment that Jonathan Engels wants to make.
Can you hear me?
Yes, so you can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
So it seems like it's often forgotten that in the case of loop quantum gravity, one is really interested in holomorphic wave functionals. And when you restrict yourself to holomorphic wave functionals, the non-compactness of the gauge group is not really a problem. One can construct inner products, one can construct at least one inner product, which is skeuomorphism and gauge invariant. But the problem is really the reality. That's the really hard problem.
Okay. So, well, I agree that the reality condition is a very serious problem, but maybe we can try to use this approach, and maybe in this approach we can somehow solve this problem. I don't know. I just try to do something to solve both problems, non-compactness and reality condition problem. Okay, so what is the next question?
I just wanted to first amplify a little bit of what John said. He's referring to this thing that Jurek Lewandowski and I have been saying for a while, that if you have holomorphic wave functions, then they are completely determined by their values on, so to say, the SU2 subgroup of SL2C. So if you have any A gamma, which is n copies of SL2C, you are looking at holomorphic wave functions, then you might be able to just restrict oneself to the SU2 compact subgroup of this n copies of SL2C. But I agree that we should, I mean, we have been stuck there for a long time. And so new ideas along the lines that Andre is proposing are very helpful. I have a few questions for Andre's talk. In the toy model, how many degrees of freedom do you have, Andre?
At the first sight, it seems that we don't have any degrees of freedom, but a detailed analysis can show, you can find this analysis in the appendix to my paper, and in fact we have infinite uncountable numbers of degrees of freedom.
Now, a few years ago, maybe a couple of years ago, Josh Willis and you had written a paper using Bohr compactification and such things, showing how to handle the case where the gauge group is R or R, n copies of R. So my question is really, what is the relation between what you are now proposing and the previous proposal that the Josh Willis and you had made?
So, as I remember, Josh used almost periodical function, and here in the case of my construction, I don't use almost periodical function. I just use normal. So, in my case, every such a restricted quantum system is just a system. It's just like in a usual quantum mechanics. We just have a usual Hilbert space defined on Rn by the Lebesgue measure. So here I don't use almost periodical function. So this is the main difference, but I didn't analyze in detail. I didn't manage to analyze the details, the differences between this approach I told you today and that by Josh.
My impression is that, I thought about it a little bit. So I think the way that it was done before, one can introduce geometrical observables. So previously, you did not consider the specific model that you told us about today and which is in your preprint. But if one uses this model, then one can ask the question of quantum geometry. And if you use this previous construction, which is only for certain non-compact group, well, abelian non-compact group, then one can actually use the construction that Josh had given to introduce geometrical operators and complete quantum theory. And then the structure would be very similar to that of the polymer particles in terms of spectra, weakness, etc., eigenvalues. Our last question is really the following. That, so in this case, you do not have Hilbert space.
Yes, but, I don't have it.
Right.
Yes.
But certainly I could just take your algebra and use some natural state in the diffeomorphism invariant density matrices and can do the GNS construction.
Yes.
And my question to you and to Hanno and to Christian Weishart is there any general remark you can make about the freedom one has in getting Hilbert space representations in this specific case? In other words, for a general C-star algebra, you will get very many folia, etc. Are there any specifications in this case? So maybe we can have Andre go first, then Hanno, and then Christian.
So as I understood your question, you ask whether we can use a state on the C-star algebra to define a GNS representation. And the answer is, of course, but we can use. But the problem is that it seems to me that in this case, there is no distinguished diffeomorphism invariant state. We have a lot of such states. We know that in the case of the holonomy flux algebra, in the compact case, we have a uniqueness theorem. So then we have a unique construction. Here, I don't see any space for such a uniqueness theorem. So I wouldn't use the GNS construction here simply because I just don't know which state I should pick up and use to this construction.
Yes, so the question is really understanding the freedom. And the question is the freedom uncontrollable or is there some smaller set of representations one would get because of this specific construction?
It seems to me that this is my first impression. I didn't spend a lot of time on this problem, but it seems to me that this is uncontrollable, unfortunately.
Okay, Hanno, do you have any comments?
Okay, this is Hanno. I'm thinking about it. I'm not entirely sure. So these algebras, E gamma, they're really quite large, right? They are non-abelian. I understand they contain sort of the cylindrical functions as well as appropriately exponentiated, I suppose, momenta. Is that right?
Yeah, I would think so, yes.
Okay, and the result is still for like the inductive limit of this algebra, you get lots of isomorphism invariant representation.
Okay, Christian, do you have any
and
other?
It's kind of surprising because I would have thought that somehow the algebras that we usually would be contained in some way or another in this larger inductive limit. And so then it would be quite surprising to get more. But I think these are very interesting.
Yeah. I think that there's also a problem with the large set of diffeomorphism invariant states. I do not know whether Andrzej knows whether they generate non-equivalent states in some sense, or if these diffeomorphism invariant states basically are really form a large set, but this large set is in principle consisting of equivalent states. Is it known, Andrzej?
Say the last sentence again. I didn't hear you well.
Yeah, sorry. I hear some echo. There's quite a large number of diffeomorphism invariant states in D, as
yes,
you said.
That's correct.
But it may happen that many of them, some are equivalent.
Or pathological, right?
Yeah. Do you know a little bit more about the structure, whether you have some sectors of non-equivalent states, or...?
Well, I didn't notice any structure like that. It seems to me, this is my impression. Okay, so I didn't find a general form of such a diffeomorphic invariant state. The only thing I was able to do is to show that there is quite simple construction of such a state, and that I have of such states, and I have quite large degree of freedom at this point. And if you restrict yourself to this particular construction, then you cannot see any state which could be distinguished in time. So I wasn't able to see any distinguished sectors of such states or any distinguished state.
Even if there's no really distinguished sector, then there may be a whole bunch of equivalent states in some sense. I do not know whether they exist. I didn't study this model, therefore I really do not know this. It was just a question.
Right. I mean, there certainly would be a folium, right, of states. In other words, you use one, and then you get the GNS construction, and then you look at all the density matrices in that representation, and the question is really how many distinct folia would you have?
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that would be interesting, mathematical physics questions.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think there's one last question from Penn State, and then we'll continue.
So it seems that your construction will also apply in the case where the group is compact. Is there some sort of equivalence between your new construction and the construction that we've previously had?
This is again my first impression. It seems to me that those constructions are inequivalent. They are inequivalent.
Okay.
Follow up question to that, please. So, what does inequivalent mean? So, does that mean that, like, the type of algebra we have in the end, like in the it's just very different. So we don't have like this algebra of holonomies and vector fields or something like this, but we have some very different algebra. Or what does it
Yes, mean? Precisely. We would have a very different algebra. I expect that this new algebra wouldn't contain flux operators. So, speaking more precisely, it would contain some operators which comes from the flux operator, but this new algebra wouldn't contain any flux operator as we use in the standard construction.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, since we are at Utrecht, are there other questions in Utrecht?
No, we're fine in Utrecht. Thank you.
Okay, perimeter? Hello, is perimeter
there?
No, we're
fine. Thank you.
Are there questions, comments?
Not from here. Thank you.
Okay. LSU? Any questions, comments?
We're good here.
Okay. Is Morelia online?
Yes. No questions here.
No questions.
No questions either.
So, who was the last one?
Leipzig, Christian.
Yeah, Leipzig, no question. All right. Well, at the moment, then, we seem to have Poland, LSU, PI, Utrecht, Leipzig, Morelia, and Uruguay. Is there anyone else that I left out who is already logged on? Okay. So, this is just to make sure that we can give this number to a few other people. We have an upper bound. We can only have 9 people calling in on this number. So next week, we're going to have Frank Zawzik from Utrecht, and he is going to tell us about the very interesting work that he has been doing, in part with Professor Reuter, on renormalization group flows, and particularly applications to cosmology. Jorge, if you're still there, do you have any comments? Jorge had problems because he was calling in from Uruguay, and the connection always was very, very bad. So if there are no further questions, let us again thank Andre. And we'll meet again next week at the 27th for Frank's talk at 10 o'clock. At 10 o'clock our time, so various times for various people. Bye-bye. Thanks, Andre.